Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. On the political left, we have Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, and hi to the listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
And on the political right, Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hello, and hi to the listeners. It's good to see you. Is my Shireen impersonation on or no?
You can't see them.
You're doing well, Dan. I'm going to start right with the top news item of the week. This is the jury finding Derek Chauvin guilty on all counts for murdering George Floyd. Shireen, I want to go to you first and just ask you, where were you when you heard the news? Had you been thinking about it during the day? What were your reactions?
Yes, I was working from home, as many of us, those lucky individuals are able to do. And I saw that it was supposed to come down at 2:30 our time. I was in a meeting that was supposed to go from 2 to 3. We wrapped early. And I was so grateful because I definitely felt myself getting very nervous. I think in many of the quick decisions that I've recalled in my time, it's usually not guilty, actually. So I was pretty worried about that. And I was worried that we were about to watch Minneapolis burn. So I had a lot of anxiety and just waiting, you know, that half an hour. And then I had another meeting at 3, and I could tell that she was also listening to it, waiting for that news to come in. And I have to say, when it hit, it just, I just burst into tears. I couldn't believe that we, you know, considering all of the demonstrating and all of the work and all of the pain, over a $20 bill. Over a fake $20 potential, you know, I mean, we're not even sure that he knew, over $20. And it was incredible. And it did feel like, I know a lot of people are using the word justice. It simply is not justice. But I do think it's a step towards accountability. Mm-hmm. And that is a critical sea change in what we're seeing around policing and violence in this country.
Yeah. Dan, I think I should just ask you the same question. Were you like watching this, anticipating it, and what did you feel when you heard the verdict?
Yeah, I was closely following Twitter just because, you know, I knew, you know, we'd hear that first. And, you know, some of my friends and I had kind of been, you know, texting back and forth on what people thought would happen. And, you know, I actually did not think that they would get the higher charge. Just looking at, you know, Minnesota law, I did not think that they would get the second degree murder. And so, you know, my thought was they would likely get third and manslaughter, right, in that range. And when the second, you know, when they convicted on the second as well, and it was all charges, I mean, in some ways, I felt a huge sigh of relief, like Shireen and probably everyone did, right, is that, mm-hmm. you know, there aren't going to be people suffering even more after this potentially, you know, and we'll, you know, try and figure out in the justice system how really to make the family whole, which you never can do. But, you know, I've been trying to think, what would we do different? Like, how do we prevent these kinds of things from happening? And, you know, whether it is race-based, whether it is, you know, whether it's the type of calls, whether it's how we're training police officers, you get on the list, we've got to just do so many things different. But the one thing that is amazing, I read an expose on the young lady who actually held her phone for 10 minutes, right, recording the entire event. And I think how much has changed. I mean, the most formidable police thing for me when I was young, I remember it was 1990 or 91 when Rodney King, right? And somebody just happened to have a camcorder, just happened to be on a balcony, and just happened to like aim their camcorder at that event and captured Rodney King's beating, right? And all of those officers were acquitted, and the riots in LA and everything that happened after that. I compare that and the availability to where we are with technology today. And I think it's highlighting, unfortunately, it took us this long for the technology to catch up. But we have generations of policing that we probably, if we went back and looked at it, I'm certain if there was video present, it would change the outcome of several of these types of situations. And so in some ways, video great. Technology great, and we're seeing, you know, greater transparency, and that is going to help our police officers. It really will.
Mm. Yeah.
And her name is Darnella Frazier, yeah. And she was 17 years old when she recorded it. Amazing. It's really incredible to think about the trauma that ripples into the community as well.
And the impact.
Well, and you had in the trial, you had police officers who were actually testifying in favor of the state who were saying, this isn't an anti-police officer thing. This is good police officer activity. We're saying, look, we're not going to circle around somebody who looks like they may have committed a crime. And testified, yeah. You know, to what they did. I thought the trial was fascinating. The whole thing just was very interesting. And I'm really grateful, honestly, for the result. And I'm hopeful that this spurs change.
Dan, can you just, I echo, by the way, the feelings that you're sharing. But Dan, without nerding out too much, can you just remind our listeners the difference between a second and third degree murder charge and why you just, you know, help us understand that line in Minnesota?
Yeah, I was going to say the biggest issue is always, you know, there's always intent and there's what they know and what they should have known and actions that are reasonable within the matter. There's always there's intent to do something. There's gross negligence where it's close to intending, but you didn't really intend to do it. And that's where second is, right? And then there's really like negligence where you knew your actions were likely. And that's kind of manslaughter really on that scale of things, right?
Interesting.
And so if you keep it really simple, that's where it's at. And clearly they would say, and I agreed, the actions of the officer were beyond like accidental negligence, like a car accident. And it was certainly less than I felt an absolute intent to kill, you know, George mm-hmm. Floyd.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Shireen, I want to just talk about the Utah congressional delegation for a minute. There were all these statements coming out, and, you know, I mean, they basically said justice was served and we've got to do better and all those sorts of things. Chris Stewart, his statement read, "Today, America's judicial system worked and justice was done for George Floyd. The verdict is an important step in the right direction, but there is still work to be done. I pray that all Americans build on this progress in creating a better tomorrow for everyone." And I'm going to you, Shireen, obviously, because this is a candidate that this could be you.
Oh, well, yes, I did run against Representative Stewart. And I have to say these words, you know, always grateful to see people trying to do the right thing, but ultimately his actions matter more to me. And on March 3rd, Representative Stewart voted against the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And actually, at this point, I would encourage people who would like to see some of the items that were outlined in that legislation, including qualified immunity reform, looking for patterns and investigations with the Justice Department to get a real handle on what's happening with policing across this nation, to have independent use of force reviews. These basic things that most Americans truly do agree on when it comes to opportunities to reform policing, he voted against it. And mm-hmm. now we have the opportunity to call our senators. And this is a place actually where, you know, I don't have a lot of faith or hope for Mike Lee ever really representing me, but this is a place where he actually has some interest in seeing reform. So I would encourage people who want to see this move forward that now is the time to call your senators, call Senator Lee, call Senator Romney, and ask them to move forward on the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act.
Dan, I know that you follow what's being said as well, and I just wondered if you wanted to comment at all on, you know, what the congressional delegation said. I also noticed that Mia Love has been kind of active here, and I've caught her a couple of times on CNN commenting. She's really done a nice job.
Yeah, I think I always think former Representative Mia Love is, you know, she's a great friend, but I think she's got a great and important voice. And I think her comments really is, you know, the most important thing we need to focus on is not necessarily just focusing on, you know, what happened, but let's turn this into how do we make this better? How do we improve, right? You know, I had somebody actually ask me the other day, do police officers really need guns? And those are the kinds of questions that I think people really need to start asking about how we change the fundamental things that we're doing, right? We have constantly pushed more and more, further and further, or justified even as society, further and further towards kind of the militarization of police in some ways, right? And I think that we can step back and be asking ourselves these questions a lot because, like Shireen mentioned earlier, we're talking about a counterfeit $20 bill, right? Mm-hmm. And in some situations, you know, we're putting law enforcement into these situations where they're literally showing up to the scene with very little information and fingers are already like they're trained to have their guns out. I just, man, I'm hopeful that we can get to a place in society where that's not our first instinct.
You know, Shireen,
we're also asking them to respond to the most heavily armed citizenry on this planet. So it's a complicated issue on so many fronts.
Yeah. You know, the reform that I would like to see is the registry of, you know, police officers that violate policies and, you know, break the law. I just think it's so crazy when somebody, you know, loses their job for a really valid reason in public service and then goes right down the street and is hired somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's a licensing issue, right? At least it is in the state of Utah, right? Where you have post and those kinds of things. And I'd say, you know, man, my hat's off to the officers, men and women of law enforcement who are actively trying to do their best to do what we have asked them to do. And I don't want that to be left unsaid because I know that there are a lot of great law enforcement officers who are doing a fantastic job. In fact, it's a high, you know, professionalism standard, but we're also putting them to Shireen's point, we're putting them in tougher and tougher situations.
And we have communities that don't want to fund them. I mean, I can give you an example. We think about just the fight that we had at Salt Lake County over a very modest tax increase. 80% of that budget goes to public safety. So at the end of the day, when people want to tell me how much they support, you know, public safety, how much they want to see safe communities and invest in our officers, that means we need to pay for it. We get what we pay for.
Interesting. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about the Derek Chauvin case, but I also want to bring up another issue that has all sorts of international, national, and local repercussions. It's refugees. Refugees in Utah. President Biden reversed a decision to limit refugee intake to just 15,000. He had a backlash, and he's now walked away from the decision, and we don't know what he's going to do, but has basically said that he'll make the announcement by May 15th. I've been watching this closely because it's an interesting economic issue for our state. I'll just share a number or two. As recently as 2016, we had about 1,200 refugee arrivals in Utah. In 2020, 186. So from 1,200 to 186, and 2020 is a weird year, so let's go to 2018, 320. So, you know, less than a third what we were doing. I really welcome the news that we're going to start having more refugees, Shireen.
I do too. I'm grateful for this reversal. I was incredibly disappointed to see that Biden was on track to be the president who had accepted the fewest refugees when we think about all of the complicated issues that lead to refugee status and the long process that individuals go through to really create that pathway into a new country, into another home. There's so much benefit to everyone when we have when we take that responsibility and we really open our arms to refugees. And I'm grateful to see that we're going to be moving in the right direction on this. I will also say we have so many good organizations here locally. If people are looking for ways to get involved, there's likely to be a large influx now. And so they're always looking for people who will rent, who will mentor, who will get involved. And there's so many just wonderful advocates in our community that you can connect with.
Dan, is there a position on the right from this, or is it really just a personal choice among people?
Well, and my wife and I do a lot of work with the refugee population, right? And so for us, I guess, you know, we have a different perspective than maybe some do. I'll just say it must be really hard to be President Biden. He legitimately is being demanded to undo everything of the last 4 years and trying to find, you know, even a sensible policy where he's not completely overrun by the wave of screaming liberals is really quite interesting. This is a policy that he wanted to just take some time to make some considerations. And no, like the intense, like you said, the intense backlash, it is so hard to be the president and try and make measured decisions in this environment, even with it being his own party, you know, eating him alive, so to speak, on an issue. And I tell you, it's going to wreck his presidency.
Interesting. You know, I just think we should acknowledge the great work of the International Rescue Committee and Catholic Community Services locally, refugees in Utah. The Gardner Institute, we've done a little two-pager on refugees in Utah. We have about 60,000 who live here right now. And the vast majority are in Salt Lake County, and they represent countries as diverse as Somalia, Syria, Vietnam, former Soviet Union. Really add a lot of color and wonderful background to our state. Let's jump to a different issue. And this is, you know, maybe not that newsy, but we lost Walter Mondale in the past week. He was the former vice president under Jimmy Carter. He actually ran for president against Ronald Reagan. What I remember, and you guys won't remember this, but he had Geraldine Ferraro as his running mate.
Ferraro.
Ferraro.
I'm just having fun. But it was the first time as a young political science, I wasn't a student, but follower, that I saw a woman in national office.
Mm. Well, and, you know, it's super interesting. I mean, he was the first president, right, to come out and say, hey, based on the way we're spending, based on the way we're doing things, we're probably going to need a tax increase. And he literally lost every state except for his own. Right. Mm. And so it just shows you, like, that the American people are willing to do several things. But if you promise them a tax increase, it doesn't matter where your party is. You're not winning anywhere. Right.
Yeah.
So
he's famous,
and Reagan,
for that.
He won in like this huge landslide. But that said, like, if anybody wants to, there was this really cool Twitter post that a gentleman posted that had worked on the Mondale campaign. And he told this story about Walter Mondale, like this campaign staffer. He's this young kid, and he reunited this campaign staffer and his dad, who had been like at bitter odds. So wade through the rest of my Twitter crap and just go to that one post, and it might be something you'll enjoy.
Might be worth it. We need to talk a little bit about climate change. There's, you know, all sorts of different news that's coming at us from all different directions because the Biden administration's made it a higher priority. I know, you know, you guys both have different feelings about it. I'll just throw out some stats. That's what I'm usually good at. Our emissions represent about 1.1% of the national CO2 footprint here in Utah. Just 1.1%. We're only 0.2% of global CO2. But when you do it per person, we're higher than 30 other states. It's primarily because of our coal-fired power plants. So, Shireen, give us the quick take on climate change right now and all the news.
Yeah, so right now the UN is warning that we are just on the verge of an absolute abyss, that it's going to be beyond being able to turn things around, looking at temperature increases and just a terrible sea level rise that is, of course, happening because of melting glaciers. And I want to just link this also back to the issue of refugees. When we think about the reason that people are displaced globally, climate change is a driving factor in what is creating war, creating unrest in many places around the world. So all of these issues are really interconnected. And we're at a point now where I think different kinds of decisions and interventions are going to have to be made because we have not seen the action we needed to see.
Dan from Capitol Hill, give us your take.
Well, it is not, I would say it's not a high priority really at the state level currently. Although we are trying to find ways to kind of curtail our PM 2.5 emissions from our tailpipes. We're trying to find ways to get better gas. We're trying to find ways that we can make changes without, you know, absolute disruption in the economy. And I think that's really, you know, you have the Clean Air Caucus and several others on the Hill who are diligently working to try and make a difference on this. And, you know, it's always that balance of trying to find the right regulation balance and keep the economy alive. And it feels like that's what we're always doing with every issue, is we're trying to balance.
One of the things that I think is difficult is people aren't always able to make the connections the way they need to. You know, that climate change is affecting snowpack, that climate change affects disease and pests in our forests. It creates extreme weather events and certainly impacts disproportionately children, elderly, those with chronic health conditions. So, you know, I think it's something that is deserving of a statewide conversation. But I have found not a lot of appetite for that on Capitol Hill. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Fair.
Fair.
Generous.
Let's jump to a political topic. And Dan, I think you can help us here. Tell our listeners what the Cook Political Report is, because I know a political junkie like you knows the Cook Political Report pretty well. It's pretty much the standard, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny. It's one that you kind of frequently get sucked into watching on a regular basis, especially around political time or around campaign season. Because, you know, Cook is constantly running, and they're the best aggregator, at least in my opinion. They're one of the best aggregators of, like, polling information that's coming in from around the country and, you know, kind of tracking things on a national basis.
So they did a partisan voter index, and it basically showed that all four of Utah's congressional districts have been fading in terms of the net, you know, score, if you will. So Blake Moore in CD1 has a +20. John Curtis, I think it was like a +17. Chris Stewart, a +10. And the Burgess Owens CD4, +6. What does that mean, Dan, when it's a plus number?
I can speak to this.
You do
running
it.
In the
you
second
go, Shereen.
Congressional district. So what it means, when I ran in the second district, it was our +16, meaning that under normal conditions, a Republican would win by 16 points.
So you got to come over. You got to make up 16 points before you even tied.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
So when you think about the move, actually, from 16 to 10 in the second district, that is a dramatic shift, especially considering what a truly small section of Salt Lake County it is. So those are moves that we're seeing happening in places like Davis County, Tooele, even Washington County. So there's a lot of statewide shifting going on in these numbers that I think should be you would hope, pause for concern for Republicans, and also a great opportunity for Democrats.
I'm glad you jumped in there, Shereen, because I think it's better to have Dan comment on why is this happening, Dan? And I'm going to just throw out that there's, you know, policy reasons, but there's a lot of demographics going on there. A lot of in-migration, baby boomers, departing this earth as the Gen Zs and the millennials become voting age and on.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely we have shifting demographics, and that is an important part of it, too. I would say that as they've pulled together a bunch of this, I would say that Donald Trump was not a terribly popular Republican. And I don't think necessarily that his policies were, driving additional Republican participation. Whether you agree with them or not, or even the numbers will tell you that that's kind of the way it is. But that said, the Chris Stewart race, right? He still has 60% of the vote in the last election. And so, you know, you look at 60% to a 35 or 30 something percent, because there was a third party libertarian. So you had 5% go to libertarians, right? I wouldn't say that's a shift to blue. I would say that's a shift of red to, you know, something redder in some ways with the libertarian vote. And, you know, we can argue about that, I guess. But I think that the Republican Party is fine. And I know that sounds probably crazy, but in the state of Utah,
keep an eye on it.
Right now, we're okay.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. Shereen, I'm going to go to you again. If we're talking about Walter Mondale, we better talk about Dr. Angela Dunn taking a new role. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Angela Dunn is leaving. Dr. Dunn is leaving the state and leading the Salt Lake County's health department. And this is a really exciting move. I think there's so Gary Edwards had served as the head of the health department for a number of years, guided Salt Lake County through the pandemic, grateful for his service to the community. And I think was, you know, maybe nearing retirement before that, before 2020. And it was it's just such a win, I think, for Salt Lake County. And it's a diverse and really interesting department. And it's also a nationally recognized health department. So Salt Lake County's health department does incredible work. And I'm so excited that Dr. Dunn is joining as the lead.
Dan, in all my interaction during the most difficult part of COVID as an economist, I found Dr. Dunn smart, poised, principled, open-minded. Did she have a good reputation in the Senate?
Yeah. And you know, despite the fact that she was asked to do an impossible job, really, which, you know, and I would honestly say that's, when was the last time anybody paid attention to the state health department expert, right? Like, you know, it's been years since they've been on the TV or made an issue. And now all of a sudden they're on every day and there's press conferences. So I would just say it was yeoman's work. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think she's grateful that maybe the protesters that come to her house will only be from Salt Lake County as opposed to all over the state.
We are running low on time, but I wanted to hear each of you talk about the Salt Lake City Council vacancy. This is District 2, the Poplar Grove, Glendale area. Andrew Johnston took the job as the Director of Homeless Policy and Outreach for Mayor Mendenhall. Shireen, how do people get this job?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting replacement. It is an application that comes to the existing council members and they get to vote. So this is a strange and exciting opportunity to see a new person seated. And thank you to Councilmember Johnston, who is really fantastic.
And you become a council member just by the council putting you in.
Yeah.
Yeah, very
hey,
good.
Shireen, you gonna run?
No, not my neighborhood.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Dan McKay and Shireen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.